Happening.
You are listening to Ecologic Special for Earth Day, April 22nd, 2022, here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
Every day is Earth Day, but today it's officially recognized. Clean air and water are healthy air and water. I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Sally Gellert.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
You're listening to Hour 2 of Ecologic's 3-Hour Earth Day Special. The first hour, on religion and the environment, can be heard on the WBAI archives, wbai.org/archive, in a few minutes. The next hour will be on women and the environment. But later in this hour, we'll be taking your phone calls to talk about climate deniers, their lies, misconceptions, exaggerations, and half-truths.
The problem has become more urgent in the past few decades, until the United Nations started putting out scientific reports, reaching consensus among over 100 countries and hundreds of scientists. I want to emphasize that they reached consensus, and the United States was part of that consensus.
Scientists have been talking about climate change since the 19th century, noting how burning coal was changing weather patterns, which is what climate is.
Interesting thing about climate deniers that they confuse weather and climate. They point to a cold day in winter and say, aha, there's no global warming. And of course, they don't understand that that global warming is just one aspect of climate change. And it's one of the many problems with these people who start off, I'm not a scientist, but I feel that I can ignore scientists. And yesterday, Charlie Olson from Environment TV and I went down to Union Square to talk to environmentalists. There was a big Earth Day celebration, lots and lots of tables and lots of people. And there was some wonderful folks there. And it was interesting because I asked everyone, if you could talk to a climate denier, what would you say? And a lot of the people said they would ask them why. Just why? And other people were more specific. Why do you ignore the science? Some people go, oh, I just ignore them. I don't talk to them at all. One of my favorite responses was I would try to empower them so they don't go into denial because they feel helpless. And I thought that was a great answer. And I met this young woman, and Charlie recorded her talking, and I'll let you hear her for yourself. Reggie, you got her?
Waiting for info.
Yeah, there was a I didn't want to tell you this until at the end of her talk, but she's a sophomore in high school. But she has a lot of relatives who are denials. And so she's had a lot of practice in how to talk to somebody who's in denial. So here she is.
My dear mother is a climate denier. A lot of my family are climate deniers. This is like a common thing for me. And it's like the science is there. It's really difficult. Like, it would take effort to look at all of the evidence and say it doesn't exist. And there's a lot of stuff that, like, I've heard that at first glance, like, oh yeah, that's convincing. Like, that means it's not happening. Like, for instance, there's a study that talks about this one section of Antarctic ice sheets that was actually growing. And a lot of people cite this study. But the author of the study is like, no, this was a specific section. Everything else is shrinking, and the Arctic is also shrinking. Like, overall, this is a net loss. But, like, you can cherry pick data, and there is data that shows that climate change actually isn't happening. But if you look deeper, and if you look at the whole picture, it's really very clear. And a lot of times people don't address the specific arguments that climate change like isn't happening. And like there are arguments being made. And even though like in context, those aren't valid, but individually they are. And what I see a lot is people who deny climate change cite, like, for example, this study saying like, oh, but look, it's not happening. And because nobody addresses those specific things, they can go on saying like, oh, well, they have all this evidence, but I have my own, even though the overwhelming body shows one thing. And I just think like the main thing is the source that you are citing might be true and valid, but the conclusion you're drawing from it might not be if you look at the greater context. And I just like, yeah, it's actually people being climate deniers is something that's like really close to home for me, because a lot of my family just doesn't believe it. And I just like, I'd like to speak to you and like, hey, think about what are the consequences if you're wrong? What are the consequences for your children, for your grandchildren, for your great-grandchildren if you end up being wrong and climate change does exist and is a problem and is happening to an unprecedented scale and we don't do anything about it as a society? Think about what could happen. And hey, you know what? Let's say, which it is obviously happening, but let's say climate change isn't real. What's the harm in pushing for renewables anyway? Like, there's no downside to campaigning for climate change, and there is evidence that it's happening. And if that's not convincing to you, still push for renewables, because it's better for people as well. Like, you know, it causes, you know, certain things cause pollution, which is harmful to people. So not just climate change, there's other reasons to advocate for these same things, even if you can't find it in yourself to believe this. So I just want to say, like, think of your children, think of your grandchildren. What are the consequences if you're wrong? Dinner table debates have prepared me well for the real world, I think. Also prepared me well for suffering mental health, but that is all right.
That is really, really good. And it's true, you know, fossil fuels create a lot of problems. In addition to the climate chaos, and that's the term that I'm hearing now more than climate change, because it is chaotic.
Yeah.
But, you know, they put out particulates that cause asthma and everything else. So, you know, clean air is a reason, even if you're not worried about climate and crops and you know, those bigger issues.
Yeah, I could not make out her name. She gave her name when we first talked to her, and I just couldn't make it out. And then she later said, you know, and said, man, these are the quality of the kids who are sophomores in high school. All right. It makes me feel good about the future.
Yeah, I did see a study that like 84% of some 1,500 kids are believers, and all the conservatives were up in arms that so many kids believe it, but that's smart. We got smart kids who are paying attention to science.
Yeah, that's another thing I don't understand about climate deniers, is that they're automatically knee-jerk reaction against anything that someone who cares about the future thinks about. It's like, oh, well, the Democrats want to fix the climate, so we don't want to fix it. And it's like, one, the Democrats are not doing a very good job of fixing the climate. You know, you've got a president who is got an unprecedented number of fossil fuel leases and an unprecedented amount of tax subsidies for fossil fuel. So, and he's a Democratic president. So I don't know how you can say that just because the Democrats want it, you're against it, because it's really corporate control of your life against having freedom for your life. This is not a left-right conservative, liberal, Democrat, Republican thing. This is a life-affirming thing.
It's true. We all have kids and grandkids, and whether we're on the right side, the left side, if you want to break them down that way, or, you know, consider yourself conservative, progressive, liberal, the future generation is going to have to deal with the fact that, you know, plants are migrating to different climates, that crops are growing in different places, that, you know, the weather is affecting them. And the warmer the weather, the more the insects and growing season changes. It's a big deal.
Yeah, there's some pretty nasty mosquitoes that are tropical, and they expect them to be to somehow make it to Florida relatively soon. And that is going to be disastrous for the people of Florida once you have mosquito-borne diseases in a place that's very wet. And if the climate wasn't so warm, those mosquitoes could not survive in Florida.
That's okay. Just, corporations have us covered. They're going to come up with genetically modified mosquitoes, so not to worry.
Yeah, and then they will start carrying that disease. It's just... It is amazing what is going on. And yeah, it's like, okay, if you want to be against a Democratic president, then be for stopping climate change. I remember the conservatives, I get a lot of their emails, and while Obama was president, they said that all conservatives should get solar panels on their roof because Obama doesn't like them.
Okay.
I had to crack up at that. But it's like, okay, if that's what gets solar panels on your roof, that's great. And, of course, an awful lot of people who have solar panels also have electric cars and vice versa. So, you know, worried about the gas crisis and the oil crisis and because of the war, you won't need gas if you're using something else. And if you're using electricity, you're still using gas. Or coal, depending where you live, but in this listening area of WBAI, if you're using electricity, you're using gas, and you're using more gas than you would if you just put it in the car. But if you're putting solar panels on your home and you're using those solar panels to charge your car, then you're not using gas. Then you don't have to worry about the price of gas going up because of a war.
Assuming you've got a roof that can accept solar panels, or
right.
You have access to community solar, which is...
Go into that, Sally. That's a great option.
It's starting in Bergen County. We've got a couple of community solar projects, but for people who have a lot of trees around their house, you can't put up a solar panel. If you live in an apartment, you need another option.
Sure.
A community-owned or community-managed solar panel system that everybody can get energy from is one way to do that. And we need to find the proper places to put those larger solar arrays.
And I think we need more of our elected officials to celebrate community solar so that more people will know about it. They have press conferences about price of oil, but they don't have press conferences about more solar and ways of getting around using oil in the first place.
Yeah,
and that's one of the problems that climate deniers are controlling too much.
I know Scenic Hudson and Clearwater are working on a project to get town officials to get together and look at where is the best place in their communities to put solar. They've got a map that shows, you know, where it could work best. And we need more towns to look at things like that and really start, you know, what can we do right here locally where we are?
One of my favorite stories is Bayonne High School. A friend of mine, Tom, put the solar panels on Bayonne High School many years ago. And when Hurricane Irene hit, because the hurricane knocked out the grid, the solar panels were tied to the grid. And so when the grid went down, the school didn't have power. And they called Tom up and said, you know, we're an emergency center. We're an evacuation center. We need to have power. Can you do anything about that? And so he did. He put in a sensor and a battery array and so that if there was no electricity coming in, it would power the building with the solar array on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And when Hurricane Sandy hit, every emergency worker within miles of Bayonne, New Jersey, went to Bayonne High School to charge their equipment. And how many lives those solar panels saved is incalculable because all the emergency workers had power. Mm-hmm. And local people, you know, charged their cell phones and stuff so they could communicate with their loved ones. But it's a great illustration of value and price. The value is incalculable. The price, you know what it is. And I've told that story a lot, and somebody introduced me to the head of the education committee many years ago of the city, New York City Council, and said, tell him that story, tell him that story. So I did, and he goes, oh, he hands me his card right away and goes, give me that story, I need it. Which is a weird word, right, for a politician to use, I need it? And so, of course, I sent it right away. And 2 weeks later, there was a press conference announcing the 100 Solar Schools program of New York City. And years ago, somebody in a local environmental group said that there were only 2 solar schools and they didn't have a program for it. And I said, wait a minute, that's not true. And I called my city councilman, I called the head of the conservation committee, head of the education committee, and they're like, no, we're expanding it. No, we're going way past 100. This has been incredibly successful. Because all those schools had no electricity bills anymore.
Wow.
And so, you know, they thought it was great.
Yeah.
And somebody at CUNY said, here's the press release that we gave out when we got to 35 schools. And that was years ago. Mm-hmm. So that program is still going. And then I heard at the last Solar Summit right before COVID that 60 of the 62 SUNY campuses in New York, State University of New York, are doing the same thing as Bayonne High School, because almost all of them are evacuation centers in emergencies. And it turns out that 80% of everybody in New York State lives near a SUNY campus. So really important, again, the difference between cost and value. So you're keeping the burning of fossil fuel away, and you're dealing with mitigating climate change. New York State, I have an article on my website about this. New York State has saved 5,000 megawatts of electricity from solar and energy efficiency between 2008 and 2017. That's because the commercial net metering bill came in. Net meterings where your electricity bill goes backwards if you make more solar energy than you're using at that time. And now there's a commercial law that came in 2008. And New York State is saving about 1,000 megawatts every year. If people are our climate deniers because they feel helpless, you're not helpless. You are not helpless.
Yeah. And we also need policies. It's not just individual action.
Yes.
Individual action can go so far. And it's good to feel like you're living your values and doing what you can do. And you don't want to, have your kids say, what did you do? And say, well, nothing. I kind of waited for everybody else. But that's small scale. We also need the big policy changes.
And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. We are, Sally Geller and I, along with Donna Stein and Charlie Olson, are part of the Ecologic Collective. Ecologic is an environmental show on WBAI every Friday from 2:30 to 2:55. And we have scientists, we have activists, we try to be as much on the cutting edge of environmental activism as we can and give you the most up-to-date information that we can. And it's Earth Day, so we're doing this 3-hour special. And so this is the second hour of that 3-hour special. So we're talking about the basics of climate change, and we're talking about climate deniers. And if you know any, and you would like some information on how you can deal with them, or if you yourself is a climate denier, we certainly welcome you to call us. And the number for WBAI is 212-209-2877. It's 212-209-2877. And ask us anything you want about climate. We have a lot of information between us. It's every episode of Ecologic is like taking a college course in some aspect of environmentalism or environmental science. So Reggie Johnson is our wonderful engineer, and so he'll bring you up when you call in. So let us know. And it's interesting. I was researching climate denier, getting ready for this hour, and people sort of talk about them and don't talk to them because they don't want to talk to anybody who might disagree with them. The people they want to talk to are people from the fossil fuel companies and the nuclear utilities. They don't want to talk to somebody who's from NASA and has information.
Yeah. Well, NASA has actually pointed out that there's good and bad from carbon dioxide. It does help plants grow faster. On the other hand, the quality of the crops may be lower. I'm not exactly sure why that is, but the nutrient contents may be lower because of changing temperatures or ozone and water levels.
And the crops are growing faster, so they don't get to accumulate the nutrients.
Yeah.
The other thing, there was an article in Science News Magazine. It's a magazine about what's new in science that comes out every week. I've been subscribing to it for years. And they had an article quite a few years ago now, that carbon dioxide was increasing crop yields up to a point. And then at one point, it stopped increasing crop yields. There was more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere than the crops could use.
Ah, yeah.
And so any denier who wants to say, well, carbon dioxide is natural and it's good for crops and everything, it's like, it's the balance. We need to keep the environment in a balance. The balance of nature is a real thing, and it's really important.
Yeah. So,
carbon dioxide is existed before we started burning coal and then oil and gas. But there's a point at which it's too much, and that's true of all these problems. And there's one climate denier his name keeps popping up with these conservative emails I get. And it's funny because in the beginning, the climate deniers used to say, now climate change is not happening. There's no such thing as global warming. It just doesn't happen. And then after a couple of years of that, they went, well, it's happening, but it's natural. It's natural. It's natural. It's not caused by people. You don't have to change your behavior. You don't have to put in any laws. Mm-hmm. And then after a little while, they're going, well, it's caused by sunspots. That's it. It's caused by sunspots. And enough people said that NASA felt that it was important for them to put out a press release and have a press conference saying that sunspots are not causing global warming. They're not causing climate change. And anybody who knows any astronomy knows that sunspot numbers go up and down and up and down and up and down. So if you want to blame things on sunspots, you have to say that things are better now because now there's less sunspots. I mean, it's they'll grab anything to in order to deny that there's any problems that they have to deal with.
Given how interconnected this whole world is with its international trade and so forth, one of their arguments is that if we start to reduce emissions, somebody else will take advantage and they'll do more because we're doing less. And I kind of don't buy that. But one of the things I think about in terms of that is the people who are like, oh, I've got all these new LED lights, so now I'm going to put up extra lights in extra places and wind up not actually saving, but doing more with the same, which is better than doing more with more, but is still not contributing overall to the reductions that we need.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. Although, if they went from incandescent to LEDs, they'll have to put in 10 times as many light bulbs as they started with. So it's going to be hard for them to use as much light as they were using.
Yeah, but, I'm saving all that money on light, so I'll take another trip.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's an interesting thought. It's like, if you're saving money on electricity because you're being efficient and you're conserving and you've got your solar panels or whatever, what do you want to do with the money? Well, that's up to you. I don't think it's a bad thing that you have more money in your pocket because you're being a good environmentalist.
Oh, it's definitely a good thing, but...
Yeah. That's one of the most conservative borough in New York City is Staten Island. And there are more solar panels per person on Staten Island than any other borough in the city.
Hmm.
And I think part of that is because there are so many private homes on Staten Island. And somebody puts up solar panels, and their next-door neighbor is like, you know, are those any good? And they go, I don't have an electric bill anymore. And at the end of the year, Con Ed gave me money.
Yeah.
And they're going, oh, I don't want an electric bill either. And so they put up solar panels. And then their next-door neighbor wants to know, and suddenly you have this sort of flowing of solar roofs across Staten Island. And that's what happens. I was at a forum, and somebody in Con Ed is worried about electric cars. He promotes them. He goes, oh, we should have more electric cars. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But he's also worried about grid security, because he said, just like the solar panels are contagious, used the word contagious, electric cars are contagious. So one person has them, and the next person wants them, and the next person wants them. And he said an electric car draws as much from the grid as a house does. So what you just did was you doubled the load. And then if a whole bunch of neighbors on one part of the grid are all getting electric cars, now your grid security is a mess.
Hmm.
And so, of course, there's a lot of ways to make the grid more secure. And the new transformers are much more efficient. They don't lose as much power when they convert, when they step up the voltage. As electricity goes from the power plant to your home, it's in large amounts of voltage, and they step it down until it's to the level that your home uses. And every time they do that, you lose a little power. But the new transformers are more efficient. But the utilities are like, well, we're not going to just make all the transformers efficient. We'll put in the efficient ones one at a time as the old ones go bad. So it's going to take a while.
Yep. Our phone number today is 212-209-2877. We're hoping to hear from listeners to talk about their experiences with climate chaos and deniers and denialists and whatever else environmental is on your mind.
And we also want you to become members of WBAI in the name of Ecologic. There are several ways of doing it. One is going to the website and getting one of our premiums. And
it's to WBAI.org.
Yes, Sally, explain how to use give to WBAI.org. You were really good at figuring that out.
Yeah. So once you get there, you click the big blue donate button and scroll down to premium selection. And if you put in eco-logic, you'll find 5 pages of our premiums, including the religion and the environment panel discussion and the Pope's encyclical and the women in the environment program that we're going to be hearing a bit later in this 3-hour Earth Day special by Ecologic.
You have 5 pages of stuff. Or if you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Ecologic, or in the name of every single show on WBAI, you have that option as well. You can do that on give2wbai.org, or you can call 212-209-2950. If you want the religious package that Sally just mentioned, it's what you heard in the last hour. 212-209-2950. Tell them you want a religion and the environment, a religion and unintelligent design, and you'll get that package.
But right now, call and talk to us. 201-209-2877. We'd like to have a conversation.
I've got a song that I wanted to play because it's an aspect of climate change that almost no one talks about, which is deforestation. It is absolutely a horrible thought. If when they cut miles of forest down in Brazil or Southeast Asia or Central Africa, it is actually changing wind patterns worldwide. That changes weather patterns worldwide, so that changes climate. That's how it works. And Bruce Coburn did a wonderful song about that. And here it is.
To talk to people about the information you need next time there's a family discussion over the dinner table about climate chaos, climate change, and how we can fight those arguments. You know?
Yeah, caller, come on and join Ecologic, our Earth Day special. Be part of it. Come on in.
Oh, hi. Yes, I have a question about the acidification of the oceans. Can you explain it to me fairly simply, how global warming causes acidification? What I understand right now is that carbon dioxide naturally dissolves in water. So is it the increased amount of carbon dioxide and or the increased temperature? Like, does the temperature of the water become a catalyst which turns the carbon dioxide plus the water into carbonic acid? Is that how it happens?
Oh, I am so happy you asked that question.
Yeah, good.
A little while ago, when I mentioned that the amount of carbon dioxide is more than the plants can absorb, it's
right.
more than the ocean can absorb, more than the plants in the ocean can absorb.
Right.
And so the acidification is because the carbon dioxide in water is carbonic acid, and it's accumulating because there's too much carbon dioxide in the air. And as we kill the planktonic plants in the ocean with pollution, there's less plants to absorb the carbon dioxide. So that increases acidification.
Right. I forgot about the plants in the ocean. I forget to think about plants in the ocean. So the phytoplankton would absorb carbon dioxide, but now there's less phytoplankton. There just isn't enough to absorb that amount of carbon dioxide that's coming into the water. Is that it?
Well, it's partly less phytoplankton because of pollution, but the biggest reason is that there's just too much carbon dioxide. The plants can't absorb it all. Right? Half of the oxygen that all of us breathe comes from the plants in the ocean.
Right.
And a quarter of it comes from the tropical rainforest, and all the forests and plants, the rest of them put together, is the other quarter. And so the plants in the ocean we can't survive without them. We all die if those plants are not giving us oxygen to breathe.
Absolutely. But so the heating, the few temperatures that the water is hotter, that does not become a catalyst.
It makes it? Yeah, no, when acid is warmer, then the acidic effects are greater. And that's true of almost all chemical processes. The warmer the ingredients of a chemical process are, the faster they work and the more efficient they work. So the global warming part of climate change is also affecting it. The number one thing is too much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere for the plants to absorb. And, you know, the oceans is almost three quarters of the surface of the Earth.
Right.
And so they're so important. They can absorb a lot of carbon dioxide, but they reached that limit a long time ago.
Right, and then we're losing the coral reefs. The Great Barrier Reef is in a lot of trouble, isn't it? Because of
coral reef in the world is under threat. I spoke to an oceanographer at the Museum of Natural History years ago, and she went out of her way to find a coral reef to study that had no humans went there. She was like the only person there. And she found the bleaching of the coral. She found pollution. She found all kinds of problems. So clearly the pollution that we're putting in the air and in the ocean is moving throughout the air and the ocean and affecting places that people didn't directly damage. And the herpetologist I talked to on Ecologic, back in about 2003 or 4, when we were still at 11 a.m., they went out of their way to go to mountaintops where there was no human habitation, there was no roads, no nothing. And they found that the amphibians were dying in those places too. So what we're doing to the Earth is global, completely global. Sometimes doing this show can be pretty depressing. I'm so glad there are people like you and Sally and Donna who can show the optimism of what we are doing to mitigate climate change.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Keep it up.
Thank you. Next caller.
Good. Hello?
Yeah. Is our second caller still there? Oh, maybe not.
Caller, you're on the air. Just state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Question,
hi,
comment?
I'm calling from Manhattan. Thank you for your show and all that you do and all the information you share. I mean, it seems like human civilization, if you know, so-called, which is actually neo-barbarism, is, it's a meat grinder, and the biosphere is the meat. And basically, we have this, psycho-spiritual disconnection from the web of life. You know, we need it physically, and we're connected on a physical way, but spiritually, psychologically, we detach from it and separate it from it. You know, our whole way of living, there's a lot of disregard, especially in the cities, right? But besides all that, we have the U.S. and its, economic structure that depends on fossil fuels directly through the military, the number one consumer, and also having the military having control of the commerce in fossil fuels. That's the basis of the U.S. hegemony, fossil fuels and the control of energy and associated banking and all that. So how do you deal with that net, that web that's entangled in everything? And at the same time, you got these asset managers who are handling trillions and trillions of dollars, and they're directing global events so that they get a return on their investment.
Right.
Never mind, the consequence. And then they're shaping any kind of crisis, which is generated by the policies. They're shaping the crisis and the remedy in a way that just gives them more power.
Sure. One of the things I like to say is that no blood for oil if we don't need the oil.
And the other thing is we had...
We don't need it, but the military thinks they need it, and they're going to maintain control over it.
Yeah, we dealt with that.
These weapons.
Yeah, let's Sally answer that.
Yeah, we did. We had Cindy Peister talking about the Department of Defense and its how much greenhouse gases it used. We've also talked to Mary from Climate Finance Action about the BlackRock Big Day and how the pressure is being put on those asset managers to not continue to finance what they're financing.
And Alice Slater, who talked about the military's use of fossil fuels.
Yes.
I have noticed that, for example, the Veterans for Peace is talking about environmental issues at their rallies way more often than they used to.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of activism going on there. You're not alone, sir. You are absolutely not alone in realizing that the military is a big part of the problem. And there are actually people in the military who realize it. They realize that they can't rely on fossil fuels because if there's an embargo of any kind, all of a sudden their tanks won't go, their planes won't go, their ships won't go. So they are worried about that. So there's...
I even heard a general speaking about the fact that, if we're air conditioning tents in a battlefield in the Middle East in a solar area, and we're asking our troops to go and get fossil fuels for us, why are we putting them at risk for that? We should... The solar panels up. I'm like, well, you shouldn't be there in the first place, but yeah, at least... at least use the solar panels.
Well, there may be some logistical reason that they acknowledge, but essentially... There's people that are willing to kill. This is a whole group of people that are willing to kill to get their way. So, when you're dealing with that kind of,
that's hard to deal with.
But they are. It takes them a long time to change. But they are changing. They are listening. They are paying attention. And if you want to listen to any of the shows we did about the military and environment, our website has links to all of them. Ecoradio.org, ecoradio.org. So anyway, we have a lot of callers, so let's go to the next caller. Thanks for calling. Hello?
Caller, you're on the air. Just state your name and where you're calling from.
Thanks, Reggie.
Hi, it's Judith. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, this is a shout-out. I texted my landlord, and I told him how he wouldn't have to pay any of the light bills if he put solar panels on our building. I hope he responds favorably.
Sure. And LED also, right?
Yeah, landlords have electricity bills, too. Yeah, they've got the lights in the hallway, lights in the stairway, the elevator, and solar will take care of that for them.
Let's see if he responds. Okay, keep up the good work, and thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you for calling. Number is 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877.
Hello?
Caller, you're on the line. Just state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello?
Yeah.
My name is Mentally. Can you hear me?
Yes, yeah.
Listen, one thing I'm kind of concerned about is that the GT or whoever is running the finances of the world, the Federal Reserve Bank, they are responsible for this industrialization of the world and all of the pollution that's going up, causing this, what they call global warming. That's understood, but it seems like nobody's really attacking these forces, these rich, these conglomerates all over the world who is polluting the world, the whole earth, with this carbon dioxide emissions into the atmosphere, causing known as global climate change.
We are definitely attacking them. We're attacking them at their offices. We're attacking them at their banks. We're attacking them at their stockholder meetings. We're attacking them through their stocks. The environmentalism has gotten very sophisticated, and everything you want to have happen is happening. It is happening. All I can say is listen to Ecologic every Friday from 2:30 to 2:55, and we will let you know where the next rally going after them in one of the places that fund the pollution and that make the decisions for the pollution. It's going on. It is absolutely wonderful.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Can I ask another question? Hello?
Go ahead.
Sure.
My question is, whatever is going on, is it making any damage? Is it affecting these people? Because it seems like the world, if they go on a boycott of these industries that's making all of these industrial products, if they go on a boycott by any means, would it mean the collapse of humankind on Earth?
Well, you know, a lot of activists fought the Trans-Pacific Partnership and defeated that one.
Good one.
So we slowed things down a little bit. Boycotts can be effective. It's tricky because you want to boycott the industries that are causing the most problems without doing damage to your neighbors who are employed. So it's... I start to see a little bit of movement towards some actual antitrust regulation from the FTC. Whether they're going to do more than pay lip service to it, we'll find out. But
it seems to me that it's not effective enough in terms of people really understanding the dynamics of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so complex.
That's why we do this show. And that's why WBAI exists, and that's why WBAI has to exist, because people need to get that information to understand. Now, you already understand it. There's other people who are just learning it for the first time today, and other people are going to learn it for the first time tomorrow.
Not to cut you off, that's sort of like crazy, because it seems like people just don't have no gravitation to understanding anything going on around them.
Sally, tell them what we're doing next week on Ecologic.
Next week, we're going to talk about the fossil fuel non-proliferation treaty, which is proposed to slow down, not create a whole lot of more fossil fuels. And they want to make this.
Is that a part of Donald Trump's camp?
No, not at all.
I just brought that up because I was figuring maybe Donald Trump got something to do with it because he's dealing with all of these so-called big wigs, financiers.
Build Back Fossil Free Group is becoming People versus Fossil Fuels, and they are doing a lot of activism. A couple of weeks ago, we had Warren Hillsbus from West Virginia Rising, who they were outside Joe Manchin's family coal plant, or coal plant they used as his coal ash, and a bunch of them were arrested. People are waking up, even in areas where, Joe Manchin says, none of my constituents are concerned with this, but they are.
They are. They absolutely are. Yeah, the fossil fuel nonproliferation, that's something that wouldn't have been even thought of a couple of years ago. Sally's analogy of we stopped the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I mean, that was 300 different corporations running things, and they kept it secret, and we managed to expose them, and we stopped it. And can't imagine how much power you have, but you have to keep at it. Right? If one rally, one letter, one email, listening to one radio show is not going to do it. You need a lot of them. Right? We didn't stop the Vietnam War overnight. It took a few years, but damn it, we stopped it. Yeah. Right? We didn't get fracking banned in New York State, but we followed Governor Cuomo for years until he finally had to give in. They have to know that we are committed to this issue. That survey, that Harris poll, that 80-some percent of all teenagers believe in man-made climate change and want to stop it. Right? The conservatives are going nuts over that because we're losing the youth. And I said, yeah, you're losing the youth. Why are you for climate change just because you think the Democrats are against it? It's like, wake up. Wake up. Teenagers have woken up. Why haven't their parents woken up?
With that said, Ken, we have another caller. Caller, right. Just state your name and where you're calling from, please.
Yeah, Brian, my name is Gregory. I'm calling from Long Island. It's not about this game program. I'm listening very familiarly. So now I'm a proponent of your policies and your ideology, but I'm also being devil's advocate. So we get rid of fossil fuel today. What do we have in place? Do we have an infrastructure in place? Do we have the logistics? Do we have the engineering to outfit?
Could you speak into your phone a little bit more clearer? You, because you're coming in a little bit muddled.
Okay.
So I'll start over. I said I'm in alignment with your ideology, your policies, and so forth. I'm a proponent of your cause, but I'm also being devil's advocate. If we get rid of fossil fuels today, are we prepared to outfit just one municipality, one city, with the alternative? Do we have that science? Or do we have that capability now?
Well, we may not have it all yet. This may take a while. But the longer we keep putting money into new fossil fuel projects, the less money we have to put into the renewables, less money we have to put into the wind, the solar, the small-scale geothermal or hydro.
Every time they build a new coal plant or a new fracking gas plant, they're saying we want 40 more years of air pollution, 40 more years of climate change. That's what they're saying every time they build one. And if people stop it in their neighborhood, they're going to run out of neighborhoods to go to. And we already know it can be done. Costa Rica has done it. Portugal has done it. a lot of Western European countries are really close to it. They have so much wind and solar put up in Norway, in Denmark, in the Netherlands, in Germany.
Germany ran on completely renewable.
There are days when those countries are run 100% on renewables. Not every day of the year yet. But back in 2010, when it first happened, it was a big deal. And now it's happening more often. It's not a big deal anymore because it happens so often that the country is run on renewables. And one of the ways to get there is for us to be more efficient with the energy we do get. Right? We waste about 90% of the energy that we buy. Actually, in New York City, it's actually less than 90% because our buildings are becoming more and more efficient.
All right. Understood. So we're
but it can be done. It's being done. It's not a fast process. The energy efficiency, if it was promoted by government and there were ads like crazy, all the public service ads that you hear on commercial radio and TV, if they were about energy efficiency, we'd go real quick. There are places where you want a solar panel, you'll get it that weekend. And other places, it takes months.
Understood. Okay, so we're at the place of protest. Are we moving anywhere closer to mitigation than effective change?
We're a protest and we're a policy change. We have to tell the politicians this is what we want.
Okay. So we transition to mitigation and then effective change. Are we anywhere close to mitigation?
Depends on what part of the country. We're a lot closer to it in some places than in others. The southern states, they're pretty distant from it.
Okay.
The northern states are closer to it.
Well, champion on, my friend. I'm on your side.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Do we have time for another call, Reggie? Or
that's pretty much it.
That's pretty much it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for listening. We have one more hour to go. We'll be talking about women and the environment. Will be playing segments from a whole lot of different very powerful women working on history. There's the Women in Environment 3-CD set. And we can't play all 3 CDs, but we can play excerpts. And that's what you'll be hearing in the next hour. A $75 donation to WBAI, and you can get all 3 CDs for yourself. And that includes Judy Barry, and Chiyo Gling, and Helen Caldicott, and Lily Tomlin, and Vandana Shiva, and even a little bit from Rachel Carson. There's a lot of great stuff. So that's so stay tuned. You'll be able to hear that from 4 to 5.
In Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amara Evering with some brief news headlines. In international news, newly released satellite images appear to show scores of freshly dug mass graves in a town near the Ukrainian port of the city of Mariupol. Ukrainian officials say the images could be evidence of Russia burying thousands of civilians as it solidifies its control along Ukraine's southeast coastline. The Kremlin has yet to respond to the latest images, but in response to previous discoveries of mass graves, it has denied killings of civilians and instead accused Ukraine of staging scenes of atrocities. Russia reiterated today that a, quote, second phase of its invasion is underway, during which it will attempt to seize control of the Donbas region, Ukraine's industrial heartland in the east. Several cities in the Donbas came under Russian artillery fire overnight, and Ukrainian officials urged civilians to evacuate. Israeli riot police this morning stormed a compound containing the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem after a group of Palestinian youth threw stones at a gate. The Palestinian Red Crescent said at least 31 Palestinians were wounded, including 14 who required hospitalization. following midday prayers, which some 150,000 worshipers attended. The AP says a drone dropped tear gas on crowds. The compound is considered a holy site, both for Muslims who worship at Al-Aqsa and Jews who refer to it as Temple Mount. Last year, similar protests and violence by police in Jerusalem led to an 11-day Israeli assault on the Gaza Strip and a string of civil conflict in Israeli cities. Three rockets had been fired from Gaza into Israel since